This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning, I'm John Hoffman. We're going to devote this morning's program to economic development in St. Joe County and the surrounding area of northern Indiana and southwest Michigan. Who better to have his finger on the pulse of all that than St. Joe County Chamber of Commerce President Jeff Ray joining us on the phone this morning. Jeff, good morning. Let's start with some of the development that's gone on in the new Carlisle area, that industrial area. I have to ask, now that we're a little bit past the possibility of this great big Toyota plant that we seem to be hoping for a while, was that ever a possibility, a realistic possibility, do you think?
Yeah, it was. We were definitely in the mix for it. You know, it's interesting. Toyota had made us jump through a number of hoops, you know, in terms of helping them understand the site and the community and the workforce. They ultimately narrowed down and went to other places, but Indiana was a real competitor. And then when you look at Indiana, there are very few sites that have the size and some of the characteristics that area has out there. So it was definitely a strong interest. You know, at the end of the day, though, they gave us reasons like they already had too many suppliers in Indiana. That's a little disappointing because they knew that before they, you know, started this process and such. They were concerned about workforce. I'm not sure that's a great answer either. When they went to Gibson County several years ago, it wasn't because there were 4,000 empty jobs there. But at least we're in the mix and had a look out there. And I think the exciting thing for us is we're getting quite a few other looks out in that area in general. You know, when the area was developed some 25 or 30 years ago, the infrastructure was put in, Iontech came out that way, the thought was other big development might happen. And I will tell you that, you know, one of the factors with Toyota and other companies out there is just the uncertainty that exists. The land isn't under control. It's not zoned the right way. There are some wetland and utility issues that need to be addressed. And so there is a little bit of uncertainty that sort of makes companies think that, boy, some things could happen along the way that could derail this. We're not sure about this. The thing that has me most excited is the county is taking up a great effort to try to take away some of that uncertainty, and our hope is we'll prepare it for some future development opportunities.
How big an issue was the workforce issue? Because we've heard plenty of crying, particularly from the RV industry, about not being able to find enough people in this much more booming economy than we've had in recent years. Do you think that was one of the determining factors?
I think companies are using that as an excuse. I'm not saying that workforce isn't a real issue because it certainly is, but I think of auto production facilities in particular, and I mentioned when Honda went to Greencastle the auto plant in Princeton or in Gibson County, none of those went there because there were a lot of workers that were unemployed that they thought they could grab. Typically, a plant like a Toyota will grab a lot of folks just because of the good job that it is, the pay, the benefits, all those kind of things. So it's, I'm not sure you can use that totally as an excuse. I think what's hard for me is this workforce issue has been going on for well over 100 years. I was reading a book earlier this week that was printed in about 1910 or 1911, and the employers at the time were crying about their ability to find a skilled workforce and such. And I say, not that it's not a real issue, because every company, whether you're McDonald's or AM General or whoever, you're looking for good people, but it sort of is an age-old problem without an easy solution to it.
So the issues to deal with that, I mean, the proposed solutions to deal with that seem to revolve a lot around education, revolve around just developing people better. Is that something that you see improving over the coming term, or do you think we still have a lot of challenges there?
Yeah, I think we're heading in the right direction with it. I think certainly we're working close with the school corporations, for example, to make sure that they understand the needs of employers. We do things like Manufacturing Day and some of those things to help folks, students in particular, understand what kind of jobs are out there. You know, it was interesting. I think of manufacturing in particular. When I was young, my parents made me work in a manufacturing facility to convince me I wanted to go to college, right? They it was dirty and it was nasty, and they thought that would be the ultimate motivator. Well, jobs have changed a little bit today. The work environment's much cleaner, and I think some of those efforts to align what's going on in schools with what's realistic in the workforce are going to pay big dividends here long term. You know, it's not a a South Bend area problem. It's not an Indiana problem. It's really a nationwide problem, and those communities that figure it out, I think, are going to be the winners in the economic development race long-term. I'd like to think that the partnerships we have with each of the school corporations and things they're doing to develop students today are going to help get us there, but it, certainly 100 years from now, I think we're also going to still be talking about workforce and the challenges with getting the right workforce. I will tell you another maybe a concern: employers aren't training workers like they used to. You know, certainly as bottom lines have gotten tighter, the investment in training hasn't been what it used to be. And so, you know, one of the challenges I think is that employers sometimes are expecting workers to come in fully trained. That's just not always possible. And so there has to be some balance there between kind of what's an employer responsibility to prepare workers and what's a community responsibility, if you will, to prepare workers to be ready for jobs.
Well, and that issue dovetails into the whole problem of retention of employees in the economy we have now. Employees often have more options and may tend to jump around from jobs more, and that's a disincentive to employers to invest in individual people, is it not?
It sure is. And think a little bit about, especially, some of our retail folks, our restaurants, some of those traditionally haven't had the highest pay. Our manufacturers are walking into restaurants and handing out business cards and saying, hey, if you want to make a few more bucks and not have to deal with a bunch of customers and work better hours, you can come across the street and work in my facility. So it does, that certainly is a concern this day and age. If you went back several generations in the 1950s, people went to work at Uniroyal or Studebaker or Dodge or one of the big companies here. They worked there the next 35 or 40 years and they retired, and there wasn't a lot of movement, between companies. Certainly there is a lot more today, and that does make employers a little more nervous about investing heavily in people who might tomorrow move across the street.
Let's go back to the new Carlisle site for a moment and just talk about what is happening there with the Toyota plant out of the picture. We have that power plant, that gas-fired power plant is now operating, I understand. So that's a big chunk of the site. What else is going on out there, and what else are you looking toward in the future?
So ultimately, the power plant coming online is terrific. It's not a huge employer, but it's a big taxpayer and a big customer. If you go back, that was the early phases that were planned in the 1970s, and it just went live a couple weeks ago. So it's taken a few years to get it where it needs to be. But a terrific company, made a nice investment, already thinking about how to grow and expand. A cement plant announced yesterday. They're going to build a facility out that way. And I think, bigger picture, there are maybe up to about 10,000 acres of potential development. The real attractive piece of the property out there is the proximity to the two railways. So the Norfolk Southern Rail Line and the Canadian National Rail Line both cut through the site. There's about 6 miles that separate the two. So the county's taken an extensive planning effort in particular to prepare for that rail access. About 30% of all our prospects have been looking for rail access. We have the major transcontinental railways that come through our area, but we don't have any connection to them, and so the county's really working hard to try to do that, and so I think it'll, as I mentioned before, with Toyota or others, the uncertainty is the big problem. So the county's working on zoning and water and wastewater and transportation and trying to and rail and trying to take that uncertainty out of there, so when those next opportunities come, they'll be ready for it. In the mix right now for another large, I would call it Toyota-esque kind of plant, although not the same number of employees out there, but the size and the proximity to rail and to the heavy haul route on the road, those kind of things, there just aren't sites like that around the Midwest, and so that keeps us in the mix on a lot of those kind of projects.
So that, I guess you can't talk about specifics on that. Is that another sort of automotive type or manufacturing assembly type of business?
Yeah, just a large manufacturer is about what we can say for it, and certainly as companies are looking in the Midwest, Indiana has been a huge help to us, helping even direct people to this area. Indiana's business climate is the tops in the Midwest and one of the tops in the country. So that that's sort of the first recipe, and then the second recipe is finding those right site characteristics. And I would think the railroads would tell you that there aren't better sites anywhere in their system in terms of large acre access to road. And so if the county can get, you know, some of these other factors under control, I'd like to think we're in the mix for others. I think, though, the thing I would tell you that it's sort of important to understand that there's also great respect in this whole process to the town, right? So there's not this desire to turn this into some industrial, you know, mega center and forget New Carlisle. I mean, there's this whole plan in terms of making sure there's a buffer between the two, and there's a, you know, I'll call it maybe a longer, bigger picture strategic plan up there that even looks at roads and land use and housing and commercial and all those kind of things. And so really a pretty comprehensive, you know, process. And you know, we think that you nail some of those things down on the front end and then it, you know, takes that uncertainty away, and then companies will follow afterwards. So we're really encouraged by what the county's doing out there.
One of the other parts of town that has done, is improving, certainly, is downtown South Bend, and in particular the near south side around Four Winds Field and all the work that Kevin Smith's doing on the old Studebaker complex. Talk a little bit about that and about what you see as the prospects moving forward there.
Yeah, couldn't be more excited about that area in particular. Think about when the ballpark was built down that way 35-plus years ago, there was a thought that it would be a real catalyst for some development in and around that area. It's taken a little longer than anticipated, but the conditions just weren't right, and they seem to be right now. Certainly the Renaissance Center and the Studebaker building is really the key. It's about 1 million square feet right in the middle, and it you know, it's kind of been a deteriorating old industrial building for the last 50 years, so it'd be people wouldn't be too excited about making a major investment right next door to it, but the plan's there to turn it into really this tech hub, this great Renaissance center that will help revitalize that part of town, I think has got a lot of excitement. There's some great models out there. If people have been to Durham, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Warehouse was a 1 million square foot building right in the heart of downtown Durham, and it's a great model for, I think, what you'll see happening here at the South Bend site. And so you're seeing it really gradually chip away. This summer, I think, will be pretty transformational. Really, the external, the envelope of the building, if you will get a facelift as windows are going in and tuck pointing is happening on those buildings. And really, the more exciting thing for us is that a number of businesses are already finding their way into some of those smaller buildings that were renovated first. So we're excited about what's happening there, the ballpark with what's going on at Berlin Flats and in and around the area. And then a number of buildings in that same neighborhood also seeing significant interest. You know, downtown gets a lot of attention. Sometimes people are critical of that, but really it's sort of the core of your city. The health of the core of your city is a real you know, checkup on the health of your overall community, and so that progress downtown, I think, will spill out and certainly help benefit the entire community. And so a lot of excitement on what's going on down there, and this summer I think will be the most transformational, because you really see the footprint of those buildings you know, either take shape or be revitalized with things like the Studebaker building itself.
Is the increase in residential living downtown, is that drawn by the business? Does that help drive the business? How does that dynamic work?
You know, it's funny. It's a little chicken and egg, I think, sometimes. I think, you know, residential developers want to make sure there's traffic down there, but businesses want to make sure there's residential down there. So the city's been aggressive in terms of trying to identify what those residential opportunities look like, and it's been a good partner on helping making some of those projects go. But I think that's that residential is really key. Those rooftops are significant in terms of helping other things. I think there's a lot of skeptics out there still that wonder if you can fill all these buildings and who's going to live in all those. But so far, I think all the developers would tell you they've done really well. And you look at places like Hoffman Hotel and LaSalle Hotel, some of those buildings that have been empty for a really long time are pretty full these days. And so we expect Berlin Flats and the Hibbard Building and the JMS now has major residential in it. The Cascade was announced here just a couple weeks ago, more single-family residential on the old Transpo site, the new residential at Hill and Colfax. There's really just quite a bit happening in and around the entire downtown. And what we're seeing is, you know, that's just a trend that's happening not only here but around the country, is people want to, the urban environment is attractive to young people and old people. People that are empty nesters are coming back into the downtown area, and younger people are seeing sort of the attractiveness of a downtown. You know, the cities talk so much about quality of place and trying to build, have quality places for you to live and the amenities that you might want to have in and around you. And so those are all all part of the elements that are happening down there. I guess the end goal is to grow population. And how do we grow population? Well, we grow if we've got great places for people to live. And I think that's downtown's really heading in the right direction there.
Jeff Ray is the president of the St. Joseph County Chamber of Commerce. Always a pleasure, Jeff, and we'll be back to you periodically on Community Update. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Great. Thanks, John.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.